Saron to Simondium. This is KC 107.7 FM.
You're tuned to KC 107.7 and the program is KC Talk. En vanaand gaan ons praat oor 'n tribute wat ons gaan hê oor 'n vriend wat nie meer met ons het nie. En een van die kampvegters, die persoon wat ook heel wat dinge gedoen het. Vol program, vanaand het ons vir meneer Yusuf Patel, en dan ook vir meneer Jerry Ricketts en sy ex-vrouw. Ook ex-vrouw, dis Farida. Farida Ricketts, Mr. Chris Kilowan en dan ook, as ons reeds gesê het, Mr. Yusuf Patel. Welkom meneer en juffrou op Kasie.
Baie dankie dat julle vir ons hier sy het.
Ons begin by sy broer, dit is meneer Jerry Ricketts. Vertel ons 'n bietjie van wat soort persoon was hy? Wat soort broer was hy en 'n gesinsman daar by julle?
Wel, in die kinderjare, wat is eerst gauw begin by waar hy gebore was. Destijds was ons nog allemaal voor die wat ze verwijding groepsgebieden met het ons in die Onderperl gebleven, in Noorderperl. En hy is gebore in Gravenstraat Noorderperl op die 31ste maart 1958. Recht? Hy was, as ek positief moet gesels, hy was die gedetermineerd in dit wat hy gedoen wil hee, en sy houding het soms die houding gekreem dat dinge moet gedoen moet word soos hy dit wil hee, en dan het hy soms die leierskap gekry, en ek denk die mense het altyd baie daarvan gehou dat hy wil altyd aan die voortouw weer gesê. Maar dit is seker maar een van hulle kenmerke. Hulle sê die spesifieke Zodek Eries. Hy het sy kenmerk van hulle. Maar hulle het ook swakpunte gehad. En een van die swakpunte was hulle wou altyd hulle sin hee. Hardkoppig en die type van dinge by tye. En maar gesinsgewijs, toe hy kind was, het ons lekker saam beweeg in die type van dinge. Alhoewel hy, ek was die stil enige geweest, die introvert, hy was altyd die extrovert. Hy het vir hom dat geld. Omdat ek introvert was ek altyd een kind. As ons as ouer geraak het, het ons seker mekaar beter gevind, en Boeta moes nou maar altyd instaan en hoor wat is die probleme en die type van dinge, vooral nadat ons as ouers verloor het. Hy sê ons pa het ons ontval toe hy 14 jaar oud was, en ek denk hy was 22 toe my ma ons ontval het, en hy het my eindelijk net verstaan, kijk, jy is mis ons pa, so jy moet verantwoordelik wees vir alles waar, of instaan vir dit wat ons vir wil hee. So siblings is, was daar soms strevelinge en woordetoos, maar dit word ook mos altyd opgelos. Word altyd opgelos. Ek kan onthou, ek het hom altyd gesê toe hy terugkeer van ballingskap af, want ek weet nie of Yusuf kan onthou nie, Farida sal het onthou, naweke wil hy saam met sy comrades wees in die perl. En die kere het hulle in die bakkie geklim en net gauw vir die naweek iwers verdwijn. Ja. Hy en Lloyd hulle en die manne, die dame wat uh, in Engeland ambassadeur was, of wat hoe commissaris was, wat is dat? Carolus. Steve het altijd hier gekomen met Pat in die bakkie en die mannen het saam die naweek gaan geniet.
Ja, dan hadden we wat hier voor ons nou sê.
Oké, okay, nee, ik wil net veel op een vrouw bij sê. Dan het ik altijd om gesê, listen man, waar het die te gesin? Oeh, is jy iets los, of is het geval, omdat jy so lang weg was van huisaf, dat jy nie veel in jou werke kan aanpas by jou gesinslewe nie. Want dit was sy lewe gewees, en dit wat ek gesê het, het ook nie baie gehelp, want hy was een avonturist, hy wil in die buitenwereld wees.
Okay,
jy wil my iets gevraagd.
Ja, ek wil net saamstem met wat jy gesê het, so pas, en dis wil ons vir hom onthou ook. Ons wil ook vir Farida vraag, Farida net so, wat precies is daar wat uitstaan vir hom? Hoe kan jy vir ons meer van hom vertel?
Good evening, everybody. Good evening, people of the Valley of Paul. I'm Farida Ricketts, I'm the ex-wife. The question was asked, how do I remember him and how I know him and our time together? Yes, like Jerry has talked about his childhood and what happened, etc., before we left. But before we left the country on the 26th of December, 1982, when Jerry took us to the station on our way to Botswana to leave the country for exile when things got very bad for us. But before that time too, as other people in the community can remember and know who was involved with him, being his friend, being his comrade, he was involved in COSAS, he was involved with underground structures of the ANC in the Western Cape, he was involved with economical strikes when there were strikes around the country. He was a forefront person in his community in the Paul Valley. It was quite a few that happened that 2 years before we left. So between 1980 and 1982, there was a lot of involvement in the recruitment and activity that make him what he is, and the community that surrounded him and all the many recruits he recruited throughout the Western Cape before we have to leave on that Sunday evening by train, that we use borrowed money to get out because things were getting a little bit hot on our side. So yeah, and then we have to travel 2 days across the country to reach Botswana, where people received us, seniors of the ANC receive us in Gaborone. We stay there for a week or two and we move to Lusaka, which the more senior people were, and that was the HQ of the ANC, where we met more people and met all sorts of people that we did not know until we were involved. And from there, on the 13th of January 1983, that particular group that we traveled with on the train, it was myself, Bla, Jama Matakata, it was Vivian Mati, it was Norman Peterson, it was Temba, yeah, I'll get to the other names. So we traveled across culture, and also Lucky is someone that we don't know where he is at the moment because he fell off the bus. That time we were split up because ANC was sending us to different training camps of that they need us to be qualified to do X, Y, and Z on our return home or to further study. So anything else after that?
Yeah, anything like were you not frustrated being moving so much around, being deployed this here and then you have to go there to get some training? Didn't that affect you as a family?
It did affect us as a family because especially culturally wise, people get married, they go to work from 8 till 5, come home, do the necessary X, Y, and Z chores. You bind as a family. You have family, extended family members, and all those things. We didn't have it most of the people out there that was on the other side of the borders, whether it's in the frontline states or further abroad, many of them left even younger than us with even less support. At least we had one another's support, even though we were not together all the time, but it was not the normal traditional family relationship. We will be apart for many months and then be together again for many years, so you don't know when you're going to be sent away, for what. And you don't have much say in it in the beginning. So after doing our training in Angola, he went before me, he and Lucky went before us to Kakolama camp, which is a bigger camp in the province of Angola. It's more to the east. And then me and Jama Matakata, we were sent later to a place called Kashitu, which was like a transit camp where we also met tons of people and we learned so many things that we're not aware of, etc. And from there, they will be sent to different camps of specialization, because there were quite a few camps around Angola and we were still young and think we can conquer the world at that time. There was much more people before us as the years went by. And then when we were split up on the 13th of January 1983, we only returned together in about August 83. So yeah, that gap is also a very negative gap, because we were not like in a house. People were in different camps. We lived in different houses. And if I can count how many houses we lived together, because we have to jump fences and dodge bullets and there was curfews. So, for example, in Botswana, when we were in the frontline state in Botswana, when we returned from Lusaka after doing all possible training that they thought we were ready to go forward and across the country, we have to at night, when it's nighttime, we have to make sure which neighbor is going to take us for the evening and slide in and out of our gates and slide in and out of their gates, sleep with Aslam Timo, the older person on our side, if he was with us, because we send him home at some stage. And in the morning, we just go back before sunrise and pretend we woke up and we go to work. He was working in Botswana when we stayed for the longest there at Toyota Motors, which Comrade Dada of Gaborone offered him the job, because we all had cover jobs. And at that time, I was working with the International Red Cross together with the president's wife, President Maseri. So we just have to pretend. So many parts of our life there, and on the returning, we have to undo lots of pretends, and because we have to be covered all the time. Because in those frontline states, whatever, there's lots of expatriates. They want to know your X, Y, and Z, and you have to always keep a story going. And you have to believe the story, to remember the story, and not also to undo the story for someone else to pick it up. So it was tough. That time, you don't feel it that much because you're young and adrenaline is high. But as time goes on, things do change. When a child comes, the security forces were on our tail all the time. So it was in June, 14th of June, 84, when the house we stayed in Gaborone, that many people died, our house also saw being blasted up. So, and then Jerry, his brother, and my sister Amina came up to fetch Timol. He was 10 months old, Jerry. He was about 10 months old, yeah. So for safety and for survival of the child, while he didn't, 22 years old, he passed away in an accident together with his sister's child, Michael. So Timol survived all those things coming to be laid to rest in South Africa, yeah. 85. So many people died that time, and after that, when I returned home, Bla remained in Botswana, and out of fear that what he could do, when I was detained at some stage, they sent him to Russia for training and elsewhere, which he always talked about, and it was during winter because they had funny socks and funny clothes that he always talked about. So he had a very good training in Russia as well as in Zimbabwe. So even if you think Zimbabwe is just nothing across the country, it's not like that. It's very good training, very good soldiers. You learn a lot that we take for granted from our frontline states. So while in Botswana also, that period when I was not in GABS itself, his house was, the two houses that he stayed was also raided and bombed. So Bla survived all those bombs. So that was also very traumatized. And while luckily in certain villages, communities will support you, but in certain communities where they maybe get told, watch out for terrorists, watch out for people, watch out for this car, they are very effective in that way. Lusaka was a little bit better for us to be covered, but in Botswana we didn't have much of that covering because it was a small place and everybody tell tales. So it was tough. So, yeah. Even when he was part of the group that bring people across the border from Lusaka to Botswana on the way to South Africa, or from Botswana over to Lusaka into safety, they have to cross the Zambezi River regularly, and which means it's danger of hippos, crocodiles, and also security that can shoot. They were also lately busy with the family of some of those. Who, there's one person that survived one day on a dinghy. I think it was 1989 when I was in prison, because I listened on my prison radio about that dinghy that went off. And then it was like, was Bla on the dinghy. So people crossed that time the Zambezi River to go south, and the hippo hit the dinghy and they died and one person survived. So for the past few years, I remember there was communication with that family, etc., because it's very traumatizing because you didn't know where the people, families were, how to get there without being being in trouble. A network have to be put up if anything happened to anybody in exile, to inform the families, and Jerry them can know how stressful it was. And there was no WhatsApp, there was no Twitter.
Yeah.
It was another kind of setup that was not easy for parents and wives that have to stay behind.
Yes,
so Bla tried to cover a lot of bullets with his hand because we didn't have shields. So that was a part there which we can talk for the whole year about it, what happened on the other side of the border.
Okay.
Camps.
Yes, you're still tuned to KC Talk, and we played with pay a tribute to that is Patrick Thomas Bla, as his ex-wife just said, and also his surname is Ricketts. And we have Mr. Ricketts here, or Mr. Jerry Ricketts, as well as his son is here, and also Mr. Jerry Ricketts, and also Chris Kilowan, as well as Mr. Yusuf Patel. Let's go for a break, and then after the break we'll continue this conversation. You're more than welcome to contact me, anything that you want to share with us. The number in studio is 082-414-1077.
Touch down at your house and we can make a stop for some drink and some food, then we head out to the moon, moon. One day when I'm big, I wanna fly a rocket, pick up all my friends so we can throw a party with lights and balloons, and we can dance on the moon, spend my time. time with.
Into KEC Talk with me, Avalon, my host, and I'm the host, and with us we have his brother, that's Mr. Jerry Ricketts, and also his ex-wife Farida Ricketts, and also Mr. Yusuf Patel, and also Chris Kilowanda. Let's listen to Mr. Yusuf Patel. How do you relate to Mr. Esblah, as we say, he's been called? As I know, he was daar vir geregtigheid en vir ekonomiese vryheid vir almal.
Thank you to Casey for allowing us the time to chat here and reflect on Comrade Blah. I met Patrick in 1976 after the riots that was actually ongoing here. And I met him with Neil MacDonald and I think what was Edwin Creel. Right. Now that is another story that needs to be captured of Neil as well, because when I met Neil after that, Neil and Edwin and another person which I can't recall the name actually left the country to go into exile. They went via Namibia. They were arrested in Namibia, and our famous detective here, Daniels Umdan, actually went to confess them there, and the tortures which they went through. But leave that as my Blah meant a lot to me in my life. In actual fact, I regard Blah after Nana that he took over the cudgels of the question of giving credence to our liberation struggle here. Mm. Whether it was MK, whether it was ANC, and Kilowan is next to me. My home and Paul's home was always there for us to meet, because none of the youngsters could meet at their home. Their parents would kill them if they find them talking about those things at that time. And it was a unit that emerged in Paul, which was formidable. You can reflect on the question later when Bladem left on the consumer boycott, that Paul was the strongest body in the Western Cape of driving that. If you look at the formation of COSAS, the first branch of COSAS in the southern part of Africa was actually in Paul. So you talk about a person that had the drive to see to question of first and foremost justice and to be humane in that regard. I recall times where people were evicted from the farms, in the Dal. How that youth, and I think were you part of that, Kilowan, where they came out to support those people, saw to those people that they get food, and those people were sitting there on that pavement for about 3 days. And eventually one of a nice person that lived in New Orleans sponsored them with the question of getting tents for them and getting into the park. Mm. But I recall there, Blah slept with those people. I recall, because Normie stayed with me at that time, Normie Peterson, another story of a youngster come from the farm, Bladen found him sleeping in a car in Chicago. And it was too difficult for him in the afternoon after school to walk back to the farm. And then the following morning back to... So he would squat during the week around the pile. If he didn't get anybody that would take him in to sleep, then he would find a bush or one of these old cars to sleep in. Now, Bla brought him to my home because, I mean, and he just told me, hey, Bra Joe, delighted slap like man, he's a hunger work man. He's not going to eat for the day. And therefore, I actually admire my wife. Never turned a person away. Even you, Bla could walk into any flats, any area, yeah. All the guys would know Bla. And he was a free, and they would actually complain to him of all the problems that they had. He went to college, and he had the leadership quality of leading the 1980 boycotts. Was led by him, with all the students in the Western Cape. I think that was the influence why Lloyd and Mikey Creel were the first two students that was arrested in 1988. But remember, Lloyd was part of the underground structure, not the underground, the study group. Another thing of Bla, he needed to conscientize people. Nobody knew about it. But the social review booklet that came out every month was Bla, Neil, and Kamali.
Cecil Kamali.
And that thing was distributed. I don't know how they managed to have that printed with the cost. But it was distributed widely in the Western Cape. And nobody knew who were the authors of that. Nobody knew who actually wrote that. Okay? So, if you look at that, Bla, and the respect he had from the old people. I mean, Bakweni, he was regarded as the son of Bakweni. That's why this weekend we've got to make work on finding some of those old people to bring them there. He left the country. You can go to Angola. You can go to Botswana. You would be surprised the respect the people have for Bla. He became a true international revolutionary. The Cubans love him. I got the script now from the Argentinians, which he took through to Cuatacuanavilla. The respect that they have for him. And the saddest part is that this leadership that we have at the present moment doesn't respect him. Doesn't give him the credits. They didn't give that to him. In actual, they're undermining his contribution to the struggle. I think a lot of those things will be said on Saturday. You're going to find things that have been said. I would like you to record it and see how we play. Because he was truly even a son of the soil of power. He was a son of the soil of Africa. And we've got to give that credit to him. Thank you, Chief.
Let's go straight to Kilowan. Kilowan, your relationship is broken with very late here.
Yeah, look, I think the people of my age and Jerry's age and so on, we were the people who were influenced by what happened in 1976 in Soweto. That time I was still at school. Standard 9, it's 1976. And from early on, Patrick, Comrade Bla, came to us, started to organize us at Nwereparo High, where we were all, went to school at. And then, as Joe said, we organically gathered around his leadership. And that's why we all only knew Comrade Bla and Patrick in terms of our conscientization about the revolutionary ideology, the understanding of Marxist analysis, the way in which you analyze situations and so forth, because he had gone and made contact with the ANC in exile, and that's why in 82 when they left, it was not necessarily because they went into the unknown, but it's because they went into exile as a result of the fact that things were becoming too dangerous for them inside South Africa as a result of the work that he did. So essentially, when I, the last time I saw him was a few years ago when my wife's aunt, Ivy Kasaburi, was sick in the hospital in Pretoria, and we went to see her, and he was also there at the hospital. And that was the last time I saw Pat. Later I saw him again at another function. But the fire that was in him from his youth was still inside him, but there was a also a heaviness inside him because of the expectations that were disappointed. You know, the expectations that we all had as people who were part of the struggle for the liberation of South Africa. And as Joe has said, the saddest part is that there are many people who went from power into exile, either joined APLA, joined the PAC, but most of us were gravitating towards the ANC in Botswana. There were also some of our friends who were caught on the border at Ramatlabama as they were about to enter into Botswana, because some of our own comrades back here in power gave us away, gave them away. So those are the things that for Pat to remain steadfast, you know, in the struggle, despite all of these negative things that were happening to them, as Farida has already said, is, as Jerry has said, it's part of his determination, say hardkoppigheid, not to let go of this thing that he has spent his entire life on, and that is the liberation of South Africa. So for me, and that is this thing that I say, we should celebrate, but also acknowledge and make people aware, people of power aware, that here we have somebody from power, and as Yusuf has said, who has become an Africanist rather than just a Palite. Thank you.
Yes, we are talking to and we're paying tribute to Pat, as they say, Pat Blah Ricketts, and we can listen to one of his. Actually, Pat was his commander, and this is the ex mayor also of Drakenstein here in Paul. So let's listen to Alan Paulser, what he has to say about his friend.
KC 107.7 FM, the sound that sets you free.
Hi, good evening. I'm Alan Paulser. I'm here tonight to give a personal account of my relationship with Blah, commonly known as Patrick Ricketts, and I want to reflect on how I met him and what profound impact he personally had on me as a person. I want to start up to say that all of us that are activists and comrades at some stage got involved. I was involved in student politics, and Blah was also involved at various levels in the struggle against apartheid and for the dismantling. He was at tertiary institution, I was at a high school, Clay Niederberg School, in the 80s, 1979, as a youngster. And our paths crossed through both involvement. Blah led across the Western Cape, not only in power, at the tertiary level, the Committee of 81 in the turbulent 80s. And I was at Glen Niederburg School on the SRCs, and we came into contact through that. And that is the essential crossing of our lives. Bla was, according to me and many people, the most senior leader after Liz Abrams, the late Liz Abrams. And I think that needs to be set upright. Coming to our interactions, those who know Bla, and I had the fortunate opportunity to have met him personally and engage and interact and jointly get involved in struggles, which I'm not going to repeat. Many other people are going to talk about this tonight. Safe to say, what I can distinctly remember, Bla was the only man with transport in power. He had a Volkswagen Beetle with what we call had burglar bars in front. He propped in 8 people. And every time when we had an interactions, both in Powell and I'm including McQueenie, we were driving in that Beetle. That is what something that I still vividly remember. So that is how I met Bla through our interactions. The profound effect that shaped my personal character, Bla's honest, straight talk, dedication, despised all form of oppression of the downtrodden, marginalized. That was a life mission that was transferred into my character. And that I will always be grateful for Bla Patrick Ricketts. The struggles of all of us had the danger, as it was said before, of possible detention or imprisonment on Robben Island, banning orders, house arrest, and you could have been killed. So that is prevalent, and the structures in Powell and the protests and what happened is well recorded, and other people will reflect on that, and I don't want to repeat that. But that prompted Bla to decide to take a unit of which I was part of to the outside. On the last moment, as it was decided by Bla himself, that I was in matric and I should stay behind to build the student structures. He was the first person, as we all know, that established the Congress of South African Students that later became a band organization. His influence on me in the beginning, where I was part of the formation of COSAS, later ultimately led to my own climbing of the Congress of South African Students to a national level. And that was the influence that Bla had on many of us. I won't be able to recall all names. Needless to say, one thing that Bla told me is the issue of non-racialism. I must reflect that a lot of comrades, and this is not an exhaustive list, from McQueenie, I'm talking about Comrade Radi, Comrade Colin Devu, Pearl, Mantu as he was known, Jama Atakata, Norman Peterson, Vivian Mati, Lizzie Pike, Sis Lucy Ninzi, later on Ina Makabile and them, but we interacted, and since today, up till today, I'm carrying that value of non-racialism with me. Okay. I also want to say the legacy of Bla cannot be valued or put a value on the legacy that he left. He influenced all activists, not only in power, and comrades across the spectrum internally. We traveled across the Western Cape, Paarl, Worcester, all places in Cape Town. And one thing that stands out, the legacy is that his commitment that was inculcated in all comrades, his commitment, his passion for the poor, and always to be involved in struggles to destroy apartheid. The incidents that are well known where we were detained accelerated the process for Blah to take the struggle to another level, and that was the exile life. I can recount then that I had the fortunate privilege to have gone also into exile at various occasions, visiting Blah and his family in Gaborone, Botswana. One thing that stands out for me that I never would have known is to have known what it is in a practical reality about many aspects to be part of MK in a practical sense. Security concern, surveillance techniques, etc. To the extent that I want to then fast forward a bit, when I returned and I was detained and charged on a charge of terrorism, after I went out in 1984 at several times, those skills to sustain pressure, not to succumb to torture, deprivation of sleep. If I didn't get those skills from Blah in exile, my detention here and the charges against me could have been much more severe, and the impact on people that became part of ANC underground structures. So the second most important impact that I'm very grateful, and that is a legacy for me as a person. There can be many other attributes and legacies that other people recall, but the exile portion of my engagement with Blah is what I've just mentioned, the skills that I picked up as a MK operative within Blah's unit. When Blah returned from exile, there is one incident that I can personally recall. And as you know, Blah, one day he just walked into my house unannounced. He didn't even arrange with me and my wife that he's going to come to our house and for what purpose he comes to our house. He walks into the house and he says to me, "You now come with me." I frowned and I thought, what is this man doing? I just came from work. On the spot, without us having a choice, he says to me, "Come, you are going with me to Reverend A.B. Mart of the Bethel Congregational Church." And that is when I realized, because Muslim marriages was not officially recognized, he needed me and my wife to be a witness in the civil union to be concluded in the Bethel Congregational Church. The impact for me is, he regarded me as a trustworthy person, because calling me in particular to be a witness to a civil union to be followed without me even having known that made a lasting impression about the trust relationship that developed through years of our internal action and my time outside. And I will never ever forget what that gesture of his did to me personally. In conclusion, I want to say the best way for all of us, ANC cadres, non-ANC cadres, is to embrace what Blah in essence stands for, to improve the lives of all the people of South Africa. And in that way, we will give the most befitting legacy continuation of Blah Patrick Regis.
Yes, so that was Alan Paul's ex-mayor, and he also shared the what relationship, how his relationship was with Pat Ricketts. And we're going to talk to Reynold Ricketts about his uncle. And hello, Reino, how are you?
Good evening. Good evening, I'm well and yourself, sir?
I'm always fine. How do you remember your uncle, Uncle Bla?
Firstly, I would say fearless man, especially when you're with him. I know most of the community knows him. And if you're out with him, there's never a time to it. And he would pick on anyone in the street, regardless who's with him, you know. And you'd always say, like, Uncle Blah, but what if this guy not turns around and shoot you or stab you? It's like, but who am I and who is he? He's a human like me. We bleed. So I'm going to be okay and you're going to be okay. We're going to get out of this, you know. Yeah, and everything was always an adventure with Uncle Blah. There was no time involved ever when you were with him. Like Uncle Eleanor just said, he'll just randomly, unannounced, pull in, pop in at the house. He's like, listen, we need to, you know, it's just 5 minutes. We need to go see this uncle and that uncle. Just come with me quickly. And yeah, 10 hours later, you appear at home again. And it's like, your mother tell her, but I told you so. You must listen. You can tell him no too, but it was Uncle Blah. you always wanted the adventure, and as I got older, especially in the last, let's say, 10 years, it became a real educational experience, because then I started picking up of the stories, especially when we were by Uncle Joe. Picking up on the stories of the struggle, what they used to do. Every visit was never the same. You'd always hear a different story. And I remember 2 years back, we were sitting at Uncle Joe's house, as I remember they called it the command center. And I told him, hey, let's write a book on this, you know. Let's capture your stories. And yeah, here we are today. We didn't capture anything, but I know there are many, many, many stories out there of Uncle Blah, you know. And it was very interesting. And yeah, now, I mean, let's say last 2 years, I could personally experience what Uncle Blah did for the community, for the country. I would walk into a place and they would say, yo, you look like Blah. Are you a comrade? I'm like, no, I'm just, you know, I'm a normal guy. And then, you know, like, I remember the last time, my last experience was at the traffic department. And you know the queues, it's ridiculous to be at the traffic department waiting for your license. And I was standing there and this traffic cop comes to me. Hey, comrade, come here. And I turn around and I'm like, but who's behind me? Because like, I don't notice someone to be like recognizable behind me if I knew the comrade. And the traffic cop came to me. He's like, hey, give me your ID. And he gave me the ID. He's like, yeah, I thought so. Hey. You were Ricketts. Or you were Blah Ricketts. And I told him, yeah. And he's like, let's walk outside quickly. And I walked out. And next thing I know, we skipped the line. It's like, you know what? Tell that comrade Blah, I helped his nephew. When he comes, he best come pay what you needed to pay. Come spend the time here with me.
Okay.
And I mean, that was one of the experiences. But he literally, I could say personally that he has paved the way for me in the country, even when it comes to business related things, you know. We have some of the guys that was around him that when I needed something for business, and they would approach and say, hey, we're doing this because of Blah, you know. And that gave me opportunities to experiment, to do some, I would say, it's groundbreaking things. In the garage with my dad just watching, checking, what are you doing? And he's like, no, we're building things, you know, to save the country. Okay. We're doing it for them, you know. And now I also understand, as I'm hearing, like for the, especially this week, why I am the way I am. Okay. Now I see it. It's in the blood. It Bly has put it all out there. We're just picking it up now, you know. And yeah, as the older you get now, you more experiencing, oh, but we all are the same. We have that good heart. Like Uncle Joe said, he takes a guy off the street and says, he takes him home and says, Uncle Joe, feed him. Give him a place to sleep. Now, sometimes I get like that also, like a bit emotional on those things.
Okay.
So, yeah. That I hope that's okay.
Yes, definitely.
That's what I remember.
Oh, very fond memories of Blah that you shared with us, your uncle. And time is flying, and I think you guys have to come back to tell more in depth the stories. Time
I
is.
I just want to mention one thing.
Thank you for the opportunity to just say this. I think this nature. And fighting against the apartheid system and oppression was inculcated into him as a child. My mother was a nursing sister at a company called Roodstreet Farms in Grootdrakenstein. And when she went out that night, it was called out, my dad sometimes went with, because he didn't want to drive alone. And then suddenly we... but why is she back so early? Then we listen. She's scratching in the kitchen. Then she emptied the cupboards. And then she comes into the room and she'll pull off your blanket. And she says, don't worry. It will be provided again. God will provide. But that house that I've been to, there's a need. The children are hungry and they're sleeping cold. So I'm taking the stuff. That's why. And I think that's why where this nature and determination from Patrick to work against apartheid and oppression came in. And Rainer was mentioning something. Everybody says, or his mother usually says, but Rainer has the same nature and character of his uncle. Everybody, he talks to everybody, he doesn't see color, he doesn't see status. Everybody is welcome. And you must see how people love him on the street. Thank you very much for that.
And before we go, finish with a poem of one of his friends, what does the funeral arrangements look like?
The funeral arrangements will be this coming Saturday, the 2nd of March. It's going to be at Green. It's not going to be a church service. It's going to be a celebration of life. Because, let's leave the rest for some other day. It's a celebration of life. This viewing is from 8:30. And then the service starts at 10 o'clock, right, till say around about 12. Then the procession is going to leave to the graveyard where the burial will take place in the Yerushalayim.
Okay. Thank you very much. It's a letter from his friend. That's to Bly. It says, as I knew Bly, you indeed, Bly, was a true soldier of freedom, like many of us with the dramatic announcement of de Klerk in February 1990 in the release of Nelson Mandela and the unbanning of the ANC as well as the PAC and the SACP. It took most of us as a shock. Those of MK reluctantly had put away the AK-47s. I can imagine how Blau could have reacted. He was livid. We just had to readjust and readapt to a new and political situation. In the ANC, we first of all to be grounded in the history of our political struggles with revolutionary nationalism. That's why we had political commissary. It was not easy for Blah to adjust to our new army. He wanted a speedy overhaul of the army. I could understand his zeal and temperament. But unfortunately for him, it was going to be a long process. Go well, my comrade. You were a true son of Africa. Viva Blah. I just want to say thank you for everyone tonight and sharing his relation with our friend, our belated Pat Blah Ricketts. Thanks, Mr. Jerry. Thanks, Farida, his ex-wife. His dad was his brother, Mr. Jerry. And Rain. Thanks for sharing your story with and relationship you have with your uncle and his friend, also Chris Kilowan and Mr. Yusuf Patel that left us. Thanks again. And enjoy the rest and all of the best also for the funeral arrangements that will be taking place at Car Inn. Thanks again, and we'll see each other very soon, because I believe that there will definitely be a follow-up. Enjoy the rest of the day.
This is KC 107.7 FM.